live.
Now we're live. So for like
welcome.
For like the 500th week in a row, technical difficulties because apparently John is incompetent. Anyway.
We're clarifying.
I'm technically deficient at times. I'm playing with new open source technology. So anyway, welcome everyone. Welcome to another edition of Fresh Pulp Magazine. Two John Sci-Fi Podcast, sponsored by Fresh Pulp Magazine and
JNelsonLeak.com.
JNelsonLeak.com. So welcome. We've got jam-packed these two.
Yeah, we have a lot of stuff. We have a lot of ground to cover.
We're jam-packed.
This week.
Yeah, what do we want to start
with? I should say.
We're going to start with Loot Crate?
Yeah, let's start with the Loot Crate because we have a really interesting one. And it feeds into the film that we're
film review,
which is on Solo, a Star Wars one.
Yes.
And so we have an all-Star Wars.
Hi, Coco Sakura. She just joined. Hello. She waved. Okay, so
it's an all-Star Wars Loot Crate this time. And it's also a sort of summer-themed Loot Crate.
It is. And since we're going to be reviewing Solo,
right,
we thought it would be really awesome to, to have some
Star Wars-themed
loot.
Yeah, some Star Wars swag to put in there.
Yeah.
And so do you want to start with the pins, or do you want to, how do you want to do it?
We've explained this before. One of the things we love to do is we love to sort of scour the internet looking for cool nerd swag that we can give away to our viewers. And the way that you win the swag is you like and share and comment on this live stream in Facebook. Like it, share it.
Facebook.
Yeah, it's got to be Facebook. Okay. And you will be entered for a chance to win the entire loot crate. So two people will win one whole loot crate. And so I'm going to start by... And so one of the things that we like to do is we like to support indie and small creators. We love to do that. So pursuant to that, I'm going to start with these.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Is I'm going to let you do yours.
I will.
We'll split the work here. And I still have not wanted to turn that off.
It's almost it's a fixture in the first hour.
It is a fixture in the first hour. It's crazy. So I got enamel pins for two lucky winners. And the first one is this really cool Darth Chewie. It's like a Chewbacca in the form of a Darth Vader helmet. So it's kind of like a Star Wars mashup enamel pin, which is awesome, great quality. And I got this from Shifty Collective, and they're like, the guy was so nice because the order portal was not on point. So he was like, oh, he was really cool about it.
Okay.
So he sent me some other cool swag. And
where can they be found?
These can be found on the Shifty Collective on the store Envy Shifty Collective, or you can go on Instagram and look for Shifty Collective. And the guy's got a lot of great pins, not just this one. I chose this one for the giveaway because of the Star Wars theme.
Yeah.
This other one, which comes from for Fish Cheese, and honestly, you can't even pronounce it because it's like Fish Cheese in like Polish or something. On his Instagram account, so I can't really tell you what that is. It's Goatee CZYS. I have no idea what it means, but you can check it out on Instagram. He's got cool stuff. This is also like a little Millennium Falcon mashup of a skull and like Millennium Falcon.
It's very interesting.
So
he's a pirate in a way.
Yeah.
So
it's a pretty cool pin of both good quality, great quality. And also like I got some great between the two of them, like Shifty Collective sent me some really great stickers, like postal stickers that have like cool stuff printed on them. Which we're not giving away, but we might just start some of this swag in there. And anyway, so we can go on to your
yes, and I thought, I mean, we're doing Star Wars, and we're also doing this on Memorial Day weekend, and I thought that it, in addition to honoring veterans who have died in war, that it's also one time that people do, they start to get together with their families for the summer, and so I thought, how about a summer outdoors-themed contribution to the thing? So the first thing I got was this Darth Vader bib for when you're grilling.
Yeah.
And you just want to look like a Sith.
Yeah.
And that will be accompanied by a spatula, which as you can see is a Star Wars spatula.
Is that like a lightsaber handle?
It has a lightsaber handle and it actually says Star Wars.
Can you like unwrap, like can you like take
yeah, well,
this,
I was just going to say how mint. It's so perfect.
Just in case somebody doesn't want to actually flip burgers with it, they want to keep it wrapped for...
Right, they may want to...
Okay.
Yeah,
so it's like a lightsaber handle, so...
It's a lightsaber handle, which I think you can see, and it's got Star Wars...
It's a very good quality
in the,
metal.
Yeah, it's very... I was afraid it was going to be fragile, and if it had been, I wouldn't have included it in my contribution. And then, along with that, is a Millennium Falcon bottle opener, which I am tempted to get one of these for myself, too, because I just thought that would go really well with our general Star Wars theme. And if you've got your bib and your spatula and your bottle opener, you're ready for
Memorial Day Star Wars. Binge watch everything, okay?
Of course, it won't get to them by Memorial Day. You're ready for July 4th.
You're ready for a summer of fun,
right?
With your Vader apron,
and you will be the coolest, nerdiest cook that ever grilled.
These are so cool. You're going to want to bring them to somebody else's barbecue.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to show off your nerd cred.
And you got a correction.
I do have a correction.
We don't show these very often.
We were talking about nerd cred. We were talking. I believe it was in two episodes ago. So it was still last month. But it was two episodes ago, and we were talking about how all of these things that are now mainstream, where people are getting into them. A lot more than they did when we were kids. When we were kids, they were things that you could be bullied for. If someone caught you playing Dungeons and Dragons, or being into science fiction and stuff. And I said that when I was a kid, when I was a younger kid, that people would ask me, why do you like dinosaurs?
Right.
And you said, oh, there was a role playing game with dinosaurs, and I said no. It was Dungeons and Dragons, and I was wrong because there were dinosaurs in Dungeons and Dragons. They were right there under D. In the Monster Manual, and so I wanted to correct that because I know that people, you know, out there would know.
Okay. Yeah, so there are dinosaurs. Do you know, is it Monster Manual 1, Monster Manual 2?
I believe there were some in both, but I know they were in the...
What about Fiendfolio? Was it in Fiendfolio?
I don't think there were any in Fiendfolio.
Fiendfolio. Okay. Only get the Yankees in Fiendfolio. All right. I'm just sort
and
of...
And get Zerai, weren't they in there too?
I'm laying out my nerd cred, laying it out there. Okay, cool.
But that was our corrections, and there was also one where we were talking about what was the golden age of science fiction and all that stuff, and I found a lot of conflicting things, but I think that what we were thinking was the golden age and the silver age of comic books.
Right.
We were applying that. So we might talk about that in some later. We've talked about developing our own concept.
Criteria, right.
Yeah, for what the ages are.
Yeah,
I
agree.
And we'll talk about that.
We'll roll that out at a future date, along with some of our ongoing trope manufacturing.
Yeah.
So, cool. Yeah. All right, so... Let's dig in, man.
Let's go in. I mean, this is something. I just saw this movie yesterday, Solo, and we barely were able to talk about it because I literally walked out of the theater, and to the coffee shop to talk to you.
Which is cool because it was like fresh in your mind. But you know, I don't like normally like to plug people's stuff, like plug generally. But I went to go see this on MoviePass.
Really?
And I got to tell you, it's worth it.
Really?
I'm kind of hoping MoviePass will contact us and be like.
How did you do that?
I bought MoviePass because they were going to go out of business for a minute. They're probably going to go out of business. They can't sustain that model. But then they sort of ramped up again. I bought one, and it's like you pay $10 and they send you a card, and then you go and you use the card to see movies, and you can see one movie a day. So it pretty much like pays for itself within like one showing.
If you're
going to see one movie, at least one movie a month, you should get the card.
Well, I am going to see probably one movie a month for this, so
yes.
I probably should get that. I bought it on another thing, and it was the very first time that I'd ever put anything onto the wallet in my phone.
Yeah.
So I was kind of confused as I'm walking in there.
But
it wasn't MoviePass, so I won't say who it is, so we don't dilute the attempt to get MoviePass's attention.
Yes. I mean, give us hook us up, MoviePass. Give us a call. Like, I already have your service, dude, so just, you know.
Yeah, give us a call.
Just give us a call. Anyway, we can run your banner at the bottom of this, by the way. You know what I mean? MoviePass. So, I saw it like 2 days before you.
Right.
I saw it the day before you,
yeah.
Actually. So
I saw it the day before this.
And it's the buzz around it has been very muted, I have to say.
The thing is, yeah, because I looked this up after I had sent you the little bit of what I had yesterday, and Rotten Tomatoes has it at 71 with 58 among the fans.
Okay, so
and
before we go on, we're not doing spoilers, are we? We're just going to talk about what we did, what we didn't, didn't like.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about I want to talk about like the different characters and the general.
If we're gonna mention anything that's kind of a spoiler, then we'll mention it beforehand. Like we're not gonna just
right. But for goodness sake, this movie's been out for 2 days. What are you waiting on? Get out there and watch this.
Get out there and watch this.
I was kind of surprised. I mean, I liked the movie. There are some things about it that I didn't particularly like.
But before we get into it, though. Let's talk about our star criteria.
Oh, yes, let's talk about
star criteria. Well, writing.
Writing. Is it cinematography now?
Cinematography and directing.
Directing.
We're only with the three, right? Writing, acting,
Yeah. Okay. So, writing, cinematography, and acting.
Yes.
Okay.
We're writing, directing, and acting. What did we say last time?
No. What you just said.
It's writing, writing, directing, and acting.
Well, clearly, we didn't do our writing on this
one. We didn't do our writing on this one.
This time, okay, the first time you said writing, cinematography, and directing. And, but we can talk about the acting, too, but I think I have something to say about the cinematography and the directing. But,
okay.
We could do four criteria if you want to.
We've got comments, first of all, from Facebook. Let's check those out. Okay, so we're going to go, so what are we going with then, for the record?
Hello to Anna. And let's just do all four. Cinematography, acting.
Okay.
And because I think we have something to say. I mean, I have at least one thing to say about cinematography. The cinematographer here was Bradford Young, who did Selma and Arrival. And the moment that I saw that he had done Arrival, I immediately thought, yeah, you got some of that smoky atmosphere type of stuff in the early part of Solo that really did look like the same sort of thing you saw in Arrival. He seems to like this sort of cloudy.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Selma. There might be some of that in there too. This sort of smoky, cloudy background.
Yeah.
Where everything sort of fades into.
The difference was in the Arrival, he went mostly with warm earth tones.
Right.
And in Solo, he opted for the cooler, cooler sky tones,
right.
which was appropriate.
Right.
I mean, it's a space movie. You don't want to have, you know, anyway.
Although in that one scene, in the Maelstrom, which I won't go into,
which
was a
very warm
there.
Scene.
Yeah, there were very warm
true.
Scenes.
True.
But that was, I think, on purpose to amp up the tension in that.
And
provide
some contrast and you know, danger.
Right, and good. Yeah, but good call. So it was a very Breaking Bad type of way to break down the
colors
in different settings. So where do we want to start? We want to start with the writing.
Yeah, let's start with the writing. Well, let's start with the writing. I have a couple of initial comments first.
Right.
I can't dive into it without saying, okay. And I have sort of a nerd conspiracy theory that I may or may not jump into. But basically, Disney needs to be embarrassed.
Really?
They should be embarrassed. At Disney, you need to be embarrassed, man. Okay.
I don't think Disney's capable of shame.
I honestly think you're right, and I sort of feel like we passed shame with Jar Jar Binks. But because they're like, hey, you know what? George Lucas did Jar Jar Binks, so we can do whatever we want.
Right.
No, I think they should be ashamed because they have two movies now that have come out that are not the main franchise that are better than the main franchise.
Well, that is true. That is something that should not be the case.
And I feel like Rotten Tomatoes, that score, the 58% like viewer score,
right.
was just a bunch of haters.
Yeah, or it may just be people who were expecting something. And when we go into like my critique of it, they may be like, I'm tempted to give it a bad score, but I'm not going to. Because my basic critique of it is that I wanted it to be more. I wanted the same story. I wanted it stretched out longer.
Yes.
Because it seemed very compressed to me. I believe the very first thing I said to you about it was that it seemed more like a brainstorming session than a script.
Yes.
I did not
have that same impression, but continue.
I just felt like it was a trilogy-long story that was compressed into... I mean, it was still a two hours and 50 minutes movie, so it's not a short movie.
Right.
But it was still, I felt, my main complaint about it was that I wanted more of it, and it just felt like I was seeing every other episode of the television series, so it felt like. It felt very much like that.
The interesting thing, though, is... the interesting thing about that is... I didn't quite feel the same way. I'm going to get into the writing.
Broad sideline.
Yeah, I said hello to them.
David.
I've been monitoring their comments. So, I like the writing, number one. I can see what your complaint is. I like the writing. I'm trying not to use the main franchise as the bar. I'm trying not to.
Right, well, that's
okay.
Pretty.
But the truth is that Han Solo, even as a standalone movie, has been so much better than a lot of the other movies that have come out.
That is true, yeah.
So, even, and for me... If you don't try to overreach with these concepts that are too high-minded, too abstract, too philosophical, and too unoriginal, you're good. The thing I loved about the writing is the story was not too big. It was a small story.
Yeah, it was.
It wasn't, Han Solo has to save the universe.
Nope.
It was, Han Solo was growing up.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
And this guy that he's with has a bill to pay.
Exactly. It was a very small story. They didn't try to do too much with it. And I would say pretty much right up to like the last 10 seconds, I was like, good story.
Yeah.
So
the last 10 Seneca was baffling, and everyone who's watched it know exactly. They all know exactly what we're talking about, but we can't go into it because it'll spoil it.
And there were moments in the writing that I thought were moments of true sincerity that actually made me smile.
Where you felt like that the writers were big fans and they were like doing something heartwarming in the thing, or
So let's be clear. Ron Howard directed this. He's like the master of. He's one of the old masters of.
And he was a fixer.
Yes. So he fixed. Yes, he did. He did come at the end of the movie and fix the movie. But there's a movie between Val and Tobias Beckett. So Val is played by Thandie Newton, and Tobias Beckett's played by Woody Harrelson. And there's a moment where they, kind of express their sort of affection for each other. And I thought that was like, man, that didn't seem forced or weird or fake at all. So that was awesome.
Which Howard is great at that.
Exactly. So his influence is there. And then later on, when even though, the main character in his, Han Solo and Kira were sort of doing this kind of weird dance around each other, there were still these moments of, I won't say tension, but you wanted something for them,
Right.
So I was like, man, good
job,
Ron.
They used to have something.
Yes.
And that was exactly the kind of sentiment that you got from it.
Yes.
It didn't seem like a growing thing. It really seemed like something that was kind of coming apart.
Yeah.
But that had been strong at one point. I mean, that's exactly what that's exactly what you would have wanted.
And that was the Ron Howard. I feel like that was the Ron Howard magic that was covering some other holes that may have otherwise been glaring. It was great.
Because this movie, for the longest time, had the reputation of being a potential disaster.
Until
Howard got involved.
Yes.
And so he really pulled it out of what could have been a problem.
Yes.
And I actually feel like that thing I was talking about earlier about how it seemed compressed, that if he had been involved from the beginning, he may have said, back when it wasn't so urgent to get it on the screen, he may have said, this is more than one movie. Let's
cut it up. Yeah.
But by the time he got on board, it was just like the clock's ticking. We got to get this thing out.
I was okay with the pace because it was a good swashbuckle with occasional moments of sincerity and sentimentality, but not like hammy. So to me, I was like, you know what? I dig it. So honestly, I'm gonna give it 4 stars.
We're not even talking about the acting yet, or no?
No, not the whole movie, just the writing.
Oh, just the writing.
But I mean,
and the directing. We kind of slipped in the directing.
We slipped in the directing, and you talk about the writing, your problems with the writing, and we'll go.
Well, I thought that every once in a while there was, like I usually say when I don't like something, especially films and television shows, is that the script needed one more scrub. And there were a lot of lines of dialogue in this that I would have just scratched. It didn't need to be there. It didn't add anything, and it came off kind of amateurish. And the one that I will say, because it doesn't spoil anything, is at a certain point, Solo is dropped into a monster's cage, and these two guards say, he hasn't eaten for 3 days. This should be fun. And I was just like, that's a dumb line. Those are two dumb lines.
Shut up and watch.
Yeah, and so I just thought that
the rancor.
Yeah, exactly. It needed to be, there are a couple of places where I just thought that the dialogue needed to be tweaked. But, I'm big on dialogue. I want dialogue to be good. And I'm kind of biased when I hear bad dialogue, because dialogue should be the most natural thing in the world for human beings.
True.
But
it's not even for actual humans.
That's true.
Like, that was awkward.
And probably not for me either. So that was my main thing. I still would give the writing on this, I would still give it 4 stars.
Okay.
So what was
good? Yeah, I give it 4 stars.
Okay.
So we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Okay. So, oops. This is playing.
I hear myself.
It's weird. Okay.
And directing, we've talked about it a little bit. I would give the directing of this also 4 stars. Simply because it's hard for me to tell what would have happened if Howard had been involved all the time. So it's kind of it's
hard. You know what would happen. If Howard was directing this, it would have been a slam dunk. And the reason why they probably didn't pick him in the first place, I'm going to go back to my about why I think they should be embarrassed, because we kind of got off track.
Right.
I'm going to be very quick. The reason why the studio should be embarrassed about this movie, I said it before, is because it's the second time a secondary franchise is embarrassed. The Last Jedi was horrible. The Force Awakens was horrible.
Right.
Rogue One was not a masterpiece. It was a good movie. Han Solo was not a masterpiece, but it was a good movie.
It was a good movie.
If Ron Howard had made Solo, it would have been a masterpiece.
From the beginning,
From the beginning.
Yeah. But the only reason I hesitate to say that is because I wouldn't give everything that Ron Howard has done 5.
I wouldn't either.
But I would give him the 4 because it's just.
Yes.
It's clear that what he had, he was working to save something that had been pretty much scrambled, and he was trying to put the pieces back together.
Yes.
So I give him credit for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're both on the same page with 4 stars for the writing. So we're going to talk about directing now?
Well, that's what I would give for the writing and the directing. I would give him 4. I just wouldn't give him 5 because I just...
Right. Yeah, it's because you still have to consider the product.
Right.
The end result.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm actually going to say... I'm gonna say 4 stars.
Okay.
You're right. That's a good, compelling argument. I can't give it 5 if I don't know what the final product would have looked like under Al.
So
4 stars, direction.
I only have one thing to say about the acting.
I got lots of it.
Really?
I'll say mine
real quick.
Go ahead. Rock it out.
I thought everybody did a really good job. I thought that Alden Ehrenreich did a good job of watching old Harrison Ford clips of him playing Han Solo, and he was always sticking his finger. Ford does not just when he's playing Han Solo, but he does that all the time.
Yeah.
He's got that thing about shoving his finger up people's faces. And
this one goes here, that
one
goes
there. Yeah. And the way he was standing in doorways was just very Han Solo, and I thought he did a really good job. And I think, of course, Harrelson, who always does a good job, and Thandie Newton, which we'll also talk about later.
Oh, yes.
Who played Val Beckett, but she was also in Westworld. She plays Maeve in Westworld.
Yeah.
Donald Glover, of course. Is there an Oscar for best casting? Because he's the absolute best.
Whoever nailed that casting. Yes, yes.
Whoever was the person that cast him should get something.
He should get a bonus.
My only complaint...
He should not get fired.
No, he should not get fired. My only complaint... Also, Paul Bettany, who was driving Boss, did a fantastic job.
Yes.
I just felt like, and I often feel like this about this particular actress, Amelia Clark occasionally came off as a little wooden. And I feel the same way about her in her Game of Thrones. I just feel like sometimes she just seems like a little, it becomes clear that I'm watching an actress, and that should never happen when you watch her.
I will say this about her. Well, can finish your...
No, that was... But that was it. That was my only complaint about
you. You pretty much covered everything I was going to say, which is, they crushed the casting.
Right.
And if the movie had no other merits than this, Donald Glover nails it.
Yeah.
I think that everybody nails it.
He was Lando.
Only thing that was different about him than Lando is Lando had a perm and was probably a little prettier.
Right.
Okay, like the original, like Billy Dee Williams.
Well, if there's a sequel to this, watch him slowly transform.
Right. He's going to have a permanent next one. So, they nailed the acting. Thandie Newton, man, she is killing it in everything right now. Like, I love watching her work. And don't get me wrong, it's not just because she's a really beautiful actress. She's really talented. She's extremely talented. And the great thing about her is that you're watching her, as she matures.
Right.
She's maturing as an actress. Right. So, I think she killed that. I do know what you're saying about Amelia Clark. Is it Amelia Clark? It's Amelia Clark.
Yeah, Amelia Clark.
I'm going to have to somewhat take a little issue with that. You're right, she can be a little wooden sometimes, but there are these moments when she smiles where it just lights up the screen.
Well, yeah, that's her... I was going to say...
It looks genuine, and you're just like...
Because that's what she's good at. When you see her, when she's giving interviews and stuff, she has that sort of personality.
She's very funny.
So when she has to do something serious that's really outside of her natural personality, that's what I think is where her problem is. She just... In person, when you see her just talking, she doesn't seem to have that. She's just always smiling and always just bright and brilliant. So when she gets to do that on screen, it's powerful.
Yeah.
Because it's genuine. But then when she's slipping out of that into something like, a lot of times, honestly, her performances on Game of Thrones, where she's trying to be angry, they almost like,
I like her. I think she's good at being menacing.
I don't find her very menacing.
I find when she like pushed those braziers over when she was in the Khal Dothrak, I was like, oh my god, that's...
These guys must be
wetting their pants. But, okay, all right. Well,
we can disagree on that one. But I still give 4.5 stars for the acting in this because everybody.
So you're going to downgrade because of Amelia Clark. You just shanked the other actors.
By a half point, because everyone else was fantastic.
Okay, so I'm going to give it 4.5 stars also. You know what? I'm going to say 5.
Okay.
Because Amelia Clark's performance was not wooden enough, as you say, to warrant downgrade. And I think that, more importantly, is that you had an ensemble cast that all worked together well.
Yeah, well, they, and she worked really well. She had good chemistry with everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and honestly, I'm just so happy with the casting. I'm giving it 5 stars.
Okay.
I'm giving it 5 stars, so we're going to say 4 or 5.
I'll be the jerk this time.
You, well, you know, we'll trade up. Next week, maybe, who knows. Okay, so
And we discussed the cinematography, but we didn't rate it, but I would give the cinematography 4. I mean, it wasn't art, but it was pretty good.
I thought it was beautiful. I mean, that train scene was, like, gorgeous. So you're going to give it 4 stars?
Yeah, I give it 4 stars.
What would you give The Arrival, though? You give The Arrival? I give The Arrival 5 stars.
I'm going to
be the jerk and say 5 stars. I'm going to be,
right.
not the jerk, but I'm going to...
I'll be the jerk.
Number one, I love the low-flying scenes. People make fun of this, and they're like, oh, the low-flying scenes of Millennium Falcon. Like, that's original. Who cares, dude? That's what the Millennium Falcon's supposed to do.
Yeah, that's what they, yeah.
The Millennium Falcon
they
was beautiful. The set design was beautiful.
Right.
I'm giving it 5 stars. Sorry, but
okay.
The cool colors were...
The design, I would give 5 stars. If we were rating design, I would give it 5 stars, because I really like the design.
I'm folding it in as part of my total score.
That gives me an all around. I would give the movie 4.5.
I'll say 4.5 for the whole movie.
Yeah.
You should definitely go see it. You know, this movie got panned a lot. Alden Ehrenreich, just to kind of side note on the acting, people really panned him. And you know what? They were like, oh, he doesn't act like Han Solo at all. That's because he's not Han Solo yet, dude.
He's supposed to be a little bit more cheerful than Han. And he's not quite
as cynical and jaded.
Yet.
Right.
I mean, they even made this very clear when he said, I have a really good feeling about that.
Right.
That was showing you how he hasn't quite grown into the character that you meet in episode 4. So anyone who makes that complaint,
just shut up.
Just stop.
Just stop.
Just
leave
stop.
The experts. Okay. So, so I'm saying that, like, Alden Ehrenreich, people gave him a hard time. He did a good job.
I think so, too.
Period. Did
so.
A good job. He pulled off.
Yeah. If he had been more cynical and more...
It wouldn't have worked.
It would have just seemed like, well, there's no place for this character to go from here.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Exactly.
Okay. Boom.
Okay. So do we have any... you said that... Okay, you do you have any other criticisms?
No. I mean, every once in a while there's something in some scene that I would be like, what? You know, why was that like that? But, you know, that would get us into a series of conversations that would last for the next 3 hours.
True. So let's move on to the news, man. Let's move on to the science fiction entertainment.
Right.
You know, there's some good stuff going on.
Yep. Well, I mean, there almost was something bad going on.
There was,
yes. One of my favorite television series, which I also read the first few novels that it was adapted from, The Expanse, was canceled.
Yes.
By sci-fi.
And can we just say for the record that sci-fi, you guys should just change your name. Change your name to Fantasy-fi or just stop.
It's just
okay.
Not, yeah.
If you're going to keep Winona Earp or whatever it is, or Van Helsing, if you're keeping that show,
right, that's not science fiction.
And you're gonna cancel Expanse, which is arguably the most like
that was the most science fiction show on sci-fi.
Most successful science fiction
and the
show.
Most successful one, yeah.
Like you're farscaping the crap out of this right now. I'm just letting you guys know.
Yeah.
So,
but for those who like The Expanse, there's good news. There was a proto-molecule at the end of the rainbow. Amazon picked it up. Apparently, Bezos liked it a lot. And, you know, when Bezos wants something,
he gets it.
It happens.
Well, I think Bezos is hedging also. Because in sort of related, tangentially related science fiction news,
right.
He purchased the three-body problem from Xi Jing Lu for $1 billion.
Wow.
Okay. He paid $1 billion for a show franchise, which I'm going to... make a prediction here. Bezos, man, it's not going to give you the market penetration you want in China. It's just not. Okay, there are too many people in China who control regulatorily everything.
Right.
They're going to be taking cuts off the top that, like, by the time you see anything, it's going to be like $5. So, Xi Jing Lu, good book. You know, Hugo, I think, nominated, maybe even winner. Hugo winner. But it's not $1 billion. I'm sorry. That's crazy.
I wonder how much he's paying for The Expanse. Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. He needs the programming. He needs good programming.
Right.
So The Expanse is a good bet. And actually, one of the executives at Alcon follows Fresh Pulp.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that awesome?
That is awesome.
Some
That's
good,
a thumbs up for us, not for you.
Right.
Good job following us.
It's a really nerdy thumbs up, too, by the way.
Yeah.
So The Expanse... Do we want to talk about the show?
Well,
it's being picked up for 4 seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically human beings have colonized the solar system, or at least partly. There are people on Mars, and there are people in the belt who are called belters. They live in habitats in different asteroids, and some people around some of the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, but mostly science outposts that far out.
But they don't like Earth norm gravity.
And they don't like Earthers, and there's basically three factions as this develops.
The Martians.
The Martians, the Earth.
And Belters.
And Belters. And it's a very political, this is a very political science fiction
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
A lot of people have described it as a space opera, but
it's like space intrigue.
It's more of a space intrigue.
Because there's diplomacy going on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's tight.
It's very modern in that sense. It's sort of like you can imagine if a lot of these people who are doing these sort of space sci-fi shows back in the 60s, if they had come forward, that this is the kind of show they would be making simply because this is what works now, and this is what viewers like. They like politics. They like characters who are moving back and forth between different factions and seeing the big picture and the personal lives of the characters. And this show is just amazing.
They like their space politics nuanced. They don't like their actual politics nuanced.
Right. That's true. People do like their actual politics.
What was the book series that it's based on? It wasn't called The Expanse, was it?
Yes, it was.
Was The Expanse?
Yeah, that's one of the things that is interesting, because usually when this happens, they name the series after the first.
Right.
The
first book is The Expanse.
Right.
The first book
is Leviathan.
Leviathan Wakes,
right? Yeah.
Which I have that book. It's in my TBR file.
Yeah,
but because they keep coming out with more books, I'm like,
they're getting ready to get to the point where I haven't read.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like I'm going to be like, one out of every three Game of Thrones fans.
It's still worth it to read though. I mean, there were like two chapters, and I was like, oh, this is good.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. And the adaptation on television actually is very, I think, faithful.
I
consider
it
to be a faithful adaptation. Do we want to say anything about the show other than it's got, just covers for the news-wise? I mean, we've already praised it out the window, so.
I mean, if you're not watching it, watch it. It's a good science fiction
show. Yeah, absolutely watch it. It's only in its second season now, so it's very bingeable.
It's very bingeable, and I can't say anything, like, we can sit here and talk about things that are happening in it, but I don't know. It just seems kind of pointless.
No. I mean, we can just say the writing is really good.
Right,
the acting is fantastic. The range of the cast.
Diverse young cast.
Yeah. Well, not Shohei Akdashlu, who plays Christian.
Yeah.
Who plays the UN diplomat.
Right.
She's not really young. Most of the cast are young, but she's not
true.
Really young. But she's been around for a while.
Yeah,
she's a very accomplished.
I'm like in love with her.
Yeah, she's
like,
a fantastic actress.
I have like a secret Akdashlu crush.
She brings a lot
it's
of...
It's not a secret anymore, because I just told
everybody. Yeah, you just told everybody. And plus, she is one of these elder characters who brings an almost Game of Thrones type of wit and...
And draconianness. And like draconian,
yes,
like...
She's very, always the person who cuts through the nonsense when the other characters are doing silly young person
but
things.
But she's not doing it... Like, when she does draconian stuff, she doesn't do it because she's unprincipled. She has to.
Yeah, she's doing it because
she's like, we're killing this guy because we have to.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So.
And I love her, and her acting skills are just unbelievable.
She's been underutilized in Hollywood for years. I'm glad to see she got this role.
Yeah, and she's been all over the place too. She's had other roles. I saw
X-Men.
She was also in an episode of Portlandia. Did you know that? She played a...
I think I did.
Yeah, she played an author who was going to do a speech at the feminist bookstore.
Yeah,
and that was one of the funniest skits.
And she was also in Jessica Jones. She was in this most recent season of Jessica Jones.
She
played somebody's mother.
Anyway, she's been all over the place.
Jessica Jones, or no, it was The Punisher. Sorry,
it was The Punisher.
Yeah.
Anyway, same universe, right?
Yeah.
So
she's awesome. Okay, so we can move on then.
We can move on to
what I love, Westworld.
Yes, so we get to talk about Thandie Newton again.
I can always talk about Thandie Newton.
Right, so if you don't know what Westworld is, it's a theme park where the hosts of the theme park are robots.
Yes,
who
very
are
sophisticated robots.
Very sophisticated robots that look just like people. It's very hard to tell them apart. And in the first season, it was all a Wild West setting. And, of course, everything goes haywire, and the robot hosts start
killing people
and taking
end
over
of season one for killing people.
Yeah, taking over the park. But of course, it's also about some of them developing consciousness, and there's a lot of this philosophical back and forth about what is consciousness, what is memory. Some of these robots have implanted memories and backstories, and it's not just a robot shoot 'em up. It's very very complicated.
The interesting thing about the show too is, to this day, we still don't know where these memories and stuff are coming from.
Right.
You know, they say it's a reverie. They say it's an update. But the truth is, we don't know.
Right.
You know, and there's this philosophical element too, which they don't ever actually talk about. They only hint at it, which is this idea of the ghost of the machine, about machines that are going to spontaneously develop some sort of consciousness.
Right.
So
they keep bouncing around with that. It's like, did this just happen?
And then
did Ford do this on purpose?
Right.
The guy who used to run the park.
Right. So I think that they're doing a great. The writers, the showrunners, are doing a great job of baiting and hooking us.
Right. And keeping us. And they're keeping us on edge in a way that doesn't come off as Twin Peaks,
yes.
Lost. Like they're going to leave us
hanging.
It's
not a spectacle.
They're not. Yeah. It doesn't seem like they're just stringing us along.
Right.
It seems like they're actually leading someplace.
Yes.
Agreed. And that I can actually trust that.
They went to Shogun World. What do you think about that?
I did. I love that. I mean, I was kind of sad when I first heard that they weren't going to do the medieval world and the Roman world from the movie.
Yeah.
From the original movie. But then when I saw that they had replaced them with... they not only went to Shogun World, which is set in the Edo Tokugawa period.
Right.
But they also have another part of the park that's set in the British Raj, which I thought was a really interesting choice. Yeah.
Yeah, very briefly.
Because I never would have, that would have never occurred to me.
Yes.
But I'm kind of, you know, I still miss the Roman medieval stuff, but their choices for replacement, I thought, especially the latest episode, which is not the one coming on tonight, but the last one, which was a Kanino Mai.
Yeah.
Which was really the first one where they really were in that world. I really like that.
So did I, but people were really kind of dogging it a little bit online. They're talking about how, like, so I can kind of see how when you have like these safety modes in Westworld, how when you fire the gun, the tourists, the visitors are not hurt.
Right.
What about arrows? Like, how does that work? And I'm like, okay.
They just don't shoot.
Don't shoot, they miss, or maybe like the arrows are somehow blunted. Like, it's the future, dude. But just, you know, like, stop being weird.
My assumption would be that they just wouldn't release, that they would only shoot arrows at each other. I mean, if you want to get into the engineering of it, that's the way that would be my suggestion. Don't let them shoot at the guests.
Right.
Only shoot at each other.
Yeah, because even a blunted arrow could harm somebody. So, anyway, I just wanted to mention that stupid thing, just because I wanted to sort of inject some
internet
stupidity into it. So what else do we have? Okay, so I love Shogun World. It's beautifully filmed, as usual.
Yeah.
The character, what's his name, Simon? Who's the guy who plays Simon? The really wormy British executive.
Oh, yeah.
He's growing on me a little bit.
I didn't write his name down here, but I do know who you're talking about. He's the one who's hanging out with Maeve, who is
right.
Tandy Newton's character.
So Maeve's character is developing all kinds of new powers.
Yeah, she's
awesome.
A robot. Her character is a robot.
Right.
And she's kind of kidnapped this engineer who's a human being. And
writer.
He's a writer for the robots. He's the one who writes their stories.
Storylines,
right.
Yeah.
And she's dragging him along to kind of make use of him.
Yeah.
And
they're I like their interplay.
Right. Because at first he was really kind of skittish, but he always has this. It's dumb, really, because she could squash him like a bug.
Right.
But he, you know, they have this banter that goes back and forth between them. It's really engaging.
And initially, it was very kind of obsequious, I want to say.
Right.
Or he was
very
like wormy and please don't, you know. And now it's like he can't help himself.
Right. He's gotten to the point where he's over it.
Right.
He's just tired of it all, and he just doesn't...
Yeah. So his character's growing on me.
Maeve is growing on me. I know you were on... But there, for a long time, I wasn't not vibing with the Maeve character this season, mainly because I just felt like... I was really disappointed with what happened with her in the last season, and I just thought that she should have escaped the party. But I'm glad she didn't. I'm glad that she's back in the story, because...
Dolores is on the slide.
Is on the slide, but Maeve has sort of... the growth of her ability to control other robots is really
interesting.
Really, yeah, I really like that about. And it's weird because it's not like her character is getting better; she's just becoming more of a badass. And I like the fact that this element's coming in there of her being able to control other robots the way that she does. And I won't spoil anything about what happens in Akane no Mai, but it really takes it to another level.
I'm going to sort of put this out there. I think there's going to be, because they sort of foreshadowed that when Maeve first encountered Dolores.
Did
after
they?
After the, you know, and it was like, you're going to join us. And she's like, no, baby, I'm going to do it with my daughter.
Right.
And I think there's going to be like a Dolores-Maeve showdown.
Because they're like two different wizards.
Yes.
They're developing the same sort of power. But Dolores is, she's not using them as much. And she just seems to be, everything that was likable about her in the first season is gone.
Yes.
All of her...
Sweetness.
Her sweetness and her innocence. Now she's just sort of become this sort of vengeful cynical monster.
Right.
And I'm getting to the point where, and I, again, not to spoil anything from the last episode, but something happens there that's very, it's one of the kind of things that made me not like Daenerys, which is she does something very cruel at the end that she, you know, excuses by saying it's necessary. And I'm like, yeah, I don't agree with that. You didn't have to do that. That was just, you're just being a jerk by doing that.
Yes.
So I'm really starting to not like her character very much. But then again, I'm one of the few people who thinks that Daenerys Targaryen in Game of Thrones is a villain. I don't like her either.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not like her. I still like her.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is about.
It sounds like I have a grudge against Amelia Clarke.
It sounds like I'm sweet on her. And just for the record, I'm not really into like British white chicks. But like Amelia Clarke, I just sort of
I like her as a
person. And I'm not like one of those fetishists who's like, you know, like looking for some girl who's gonna dress up like her. You know, like it's.
And she's been in other things that I liked her characters better. But she just got in that film, and then in Game of Thrones, she got a bad. She really got a bad.
I mean,
I understand Game of Thrones is supposed to be a morally complex series, but when it comes to her, I just don't see any more complexity in her. I mean, she only wants the throne because she feels like she's entitled to it because of her family, and she's willing to, you know.
I think there's an element there of trying to restore order to her family. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
She's like, well, I have a claim to it, so may as well. So I think we covered everything.
I think we did too. In record time. And so, do we want to talk about just point people to the story the promo?
We're going to do that in this segment?
Yeah, might as well.
Okay. So like last season, episode six. Episode six?
It was either six or seven. It was the one we did.
But yeah, episode five or six, we talked about injecting science into your science fiction.
Right.
And pursuant to that, I issued a challenge to myself and to everybody that I would write a story, which I have done, that included some science fiction. And we chose a story that was based upon the fairly recent discovery that birds use a protein that's in their eyes and from a gene called Cry4.
Right.
Cry4 protein, that's a genetic trait. And allows them to navigate using, it's a magnetoreceptor.
Yeah.
So it uses the magnetic poles, and they can find their way around in addition to their sight. So it helps them sort of correct things, their navigation. Anyway, so I took that scientific concept from the story, and I wrote a couple thousand words, which will be available on. I will link to it in the Facebook page, and I will put it up later on this afternoon, and you can read it, and you can leave us feedback. There's going to be a comment section at the bottom. You can leave us a comment here in the live feed comment section,
right.
Whatever.
So basically, so when we're talking about hard science fiction, and
we're talking about rigorous science fiction.
Yeah, we don't be like, what are you talking about? And here it is. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about taking a science fact and building a story around it. That's,
right. And it's not like, by the way, let me talk about Cry 2, Cry 1, Cry 4. And then he took the tweezer that he...
Yeah,
use the codon to... No, it's not like that. It's
just built into a real story.
It's built into a real story. So
we have to have the science part and the fiction part for it to be...
Yes. So I put my money where my mouth is. Hopefully you'll like it. We're going to sign off in a couple minutes. But before we do, because we're going to sign off for this hour, we're going to take a 10-minute hiatus.
And then we're going to sign back on.
We're going to sign back on for episode 8. Before we do that, I want to mention that this whole thing does not work without your support. We would love to have your support. We do have a Patreon page. We do have a Buy Me a Coffee page.
Right.
The link to which is on the homepage of Fresh Pulp Magazine in the upper right. You can click on it. The Buy Me a Coffee will allow you to do a one-off donation.
Right.
And the Patreon will...
That's convenient for a lot of people.
Convenient for a lot of people and totally acceptable. So you can ad hoc, do it whenever you want. Or you can become a patron. And the reason, one of the reasons why is because we want to bring you more content. We want to actually buy some fiction. But there's also some things that we have coming up that we'd like to share with you. We are going to... start buying and reviewing board games. And we'd like your help with that. We'd like to be able to review those board games. We're going to film a segment with it, and we're going to tell you how it is. And then we'll probably end up give that copy away to somebody or something like that.
Right.
So these little projects that we have working, we would love to have your support in doing.
There's so much more we can do.
And if you can't do that, then you know what? If you like the podcast, like and share it. And you'll be eligible to win something anyway.
Right.
So
one of our fantastic loot crates.
One of our fantastic loot crates.
We're going to try to keep them themed from now. I like theming them. So.
Yes. All right. So, in any case, thank you for supporting us. Thank you for tuning in, everyone.